football on off the ball.
That was the main thing that when I finished playing football. In other words, you're bringing the knowledge that you have over years of football to people who watch football.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. We are with you until 10 o'clock tonight. So yesterday turned out to be a pretty seismic day in the football championship. Both of last year's All-Ireland finalists knocked out in the one afternoon. We're going to have Darren O'Sullivan and Colin Boyle with us this evening to reflect on the whole weekend, the end of the Desi Farrell era, the beginning of a brand new successful Tyrone era potentially, and that second half performance in Donegal, absolutely awesome on Saturday night. We're also going to have Monday Night Rugby a little bit later on. Chris Jones will chat to us about the Lions' victory on Saturday morning, where the Irish contingent did their chances no harm whatsoever. Joe McCarthy, absolutely outstanding on Saturday morning in Perth. And also in the 9 to 10 hour, we will be chatting to our own Kathleen McNamee because the Women's Euros begins this week, and there's also a bit of Republic of Ireland chat in there as well. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to drop us a WhatsApp, Stephen Doyle is here for Monday's bumper news round. Steve-O, how are you doing?
Good evening, lads. All good.
Mick McCarthy, how are you?
Asher and Greydown, how are you, more importantly?
Operating with limited octaves here. I think you need training to... It's like... I've lost a part of half a piano and I can only play with the lower octaves of the piano.
I did nickname him earlier, Mick. I don't know if you heard in the office. Dr. Croak.
Dr. Croak.
Are we having it?
I like it. Yeah.
Very good. Very, very good, I must say.
That's well played.
Can I just say as well, I do feel your pain because during the Premier League season, when I know I've got a game on a Sunday and you're going to a Bohemians match maybe on a Friday night, and if there's a lot riding on it, or you're kind of going, I kind of need to have my voice in good condition for Sunday for the Premier League match day on a 90-minute commentary. And it is hard when you're you know, fully behind your team and trying to drive them on.
Oh, listen, I've realised now after you said that my dreams of ever becoming a match commentator for anything that matters to me anyway, it's just dead.
Yeah.
It's clearly...
Or a rock star or anything.
Or
like
a rock star, or any sort of performer. Yeah, it's dead. I mean... They talk about that 15-minute performance for Kerry yesterday being devastating for Armagh. It was actually devastating for my vocal cords.
I can well imagine. But there is something, I think it's, look, you know, I don't want to be judging fans in any way, but I always do find that it, like, there's a litmus test to it, a certain extent of like how invested you are by how much you give up all sense of what's around you, who's listening to you, the fact that nobody anywhere near a pitch can hear anything you're saying or will ever be able to hear anything, and all you're kind of doing is annoying the little kid who's four rows in front of you who has to listen to you screaming. But actually, that all sounds negative, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For me,
yeah,
that's a test of whether you're a true fan or not, because there isn't a match you don't go into that you don't think, I'm going to take it easy here today. Regardless of whether you're saving your vocal cords for radio on the Monday or not, you're just thinking to yourself, getting too old for this crap. Let's play it cool. No, it's all pointless. And at 5 minutes in, you're tearing your hair out and screaming at people and shouting at refs and everything else.
You tell yourself an hour beforehand, this actually doesn't matter. This doesn't matter at all. Yeah. Like, your team might lose. Who cares? It's only a game. Ball is thrown in and it's just lunacy. Like, there was a young Galway fella in his mid-teens sitting beside me, and at some stage late in the second half he was like, geez, it must be great to be from Kerry. And I just mumbled back at him just some incomprehensible nonsense. And I was like, I've just like scarred this guy's childhood by whatever I said here. I don't know what on earth I said to him. But
It's mad some of the things you shout during a match, like, you know, like some of the most ridiculous, like,
yes it is,
instructing a seasoned Gaelic footballer who has been playing in his position for the last 8 or 9 years and shouting instructions at him during the match as if to, you know, this is going to sort out my team's performance here. If only the bloody defender would listen to what I'm shouting at him.
Yeah, yeah. telling a man on the Cusack side when you're sitting in the Hogan stand, switch it. He's definitely going to hear you and make the decision. It's not Kerry tinted spectacles to suggest that was... result of the weekend, like the meat thing was absolutely spectacular.
Result of the weekend. Oh, I don't know. Funny enough, if it was the result of the weekend, I think Kerry beating Armagh, you know, I would have said 50-50 going into it. But the manner in which it happened, I think it's
that's
like,
kind of what I mean.
Forget about of the weekend. I wonder, have we ever seen anything like it? Have we ever seen, like, I don't know how you felt. You're Acro Park and you're watching it as a Kerry fan, but as a neutral watching it, I said this to you earlier, and I don't know how you felt, Steve-O, but there was a point kind of late in the first half where the sense of the game was, oh, this isn't as even as I thought it was. I think Armagh, for all the talk about whether Kerry are going to reach their levels or not, I think Armagh could be just a better team, a more organised, better team, more, you know, more set up to cause damage, I would say. You know what I mean? Everything, like, it's not about individual greats, it's about everything. And I was thinking, and then when they scored those couple of points to start the second half and they went six up, I was like, I was feeling kind of like, yeah, I've kind of called this. This could be a chastening day for Kerry. And it was like 5 minutes later, the game was out of Armagh's reach. So I don't think I've ever experienced that. Like, you talk about like hurling comebacks and things, and, you know, in a faster scoring game and so on. But even in hurling, I don't ever remember such a turnaround. So, and so I don't think I've ever seen anything like what Kerry did yesterday. And it proved any thoughts I had of this being them being out of form rather than being not good, you know, completely wrong.
Correct.
Because they showed what they can do in a way that was devastating. And I suppose if you're from anywhere else in the rest of the country, terrifying.
Because I thought it was more leaning on the not good when it came to the personnel available to Kerry. And some of the people that you were judging that on stood up and had their best ever performances. Some of them having one of their first ever performances in Croke Park and playing really well. But that is, like, I think the historical comparisons are interesting here. I think Dublin in 2019 against Mayo has been brought up. Now, Dublin were favourites for that game, so maybe that was a little bit less shocking.
Yeah.
Those goals after halftime, that was an awesome second half performance. The one thing that actually came to mind yesterday for me was Mayo absolutely destroying Donegal the year after they won the All-Ireland. And it was kind of Donegal's first All-Ireland in a long, long time, just like Armagh last year. And coming down off that into year two is always a difficult thing. But as the summer goes on, and as the summer went on, maybe in 2013, you thought Donegal might have a chance. And then after the Mayo game, you're like, actually, maybe they never did. Going back to back is tough. And maybe that was the story of Armagh's day yesterday as well, where really, if they had to go to the well for a second year, it was going to be really difficult because, you know, the first one last year, they had to go and celebrate that and they had to make the most of that. And to try and do back to back at the first time of asking, I always say, is very, very difficult. Even the great Dubs couldn't do it. Like, and they got beaten in 2012, you know.
I was kind of thinking of the semi final Dublin Kerry 2018. The 2018,
It's the semi final of 16 between Dublin and Kerry.
Yeah. No, it's 2018, May 2018, Dublin Kerry in the All Ireland semi final. Sorry.
Maybe in the league.
2016.
It was 2016.
It was 2016, I think.
They rattled Foxen on the kick out.
That's exactly what I was thinking of because, God, Ethan Rafferty, I felt so sorry for him almost yesterday because I felt in that situation that they let it go on for so long, this kick-out strategy being absolutely, the Kerry were monstering them in that in the kick-out strategy. They just were pushing them so high up and rattling Ethan Rafferty. He didn't know what to do. And I just thought there had to be something from McGeaney, you know, from just the leaders out on the pitch, even from Kieran Donnie. They had to get a hold on this because it was just, they were absolutely rattled, Armagh. And I was kind of thinking all year, I think people maybe are sleeping on Armagh because they're so good. The panel is so good. They've got such depth in every single position. And they're going to obviously win this All-Ireland. They're going to do it back to back. And I really did feel they were going to beat Kerry yesterday. I couldn't see any way that Kerry were going to be, you know, I thought it might be tight, fair enough, but I thought Armagh would see them out. But just that kick out, the kick outs in the second half that Armagh just, Kerry just put the foot on the neck and there was no releasing it and they absolutely monstered them.
But it is, I think it is one of the real genius moves. Now, whether they meant it to happen like this or not of the new rules is the kick out, because the momentum, the fact that there's just no way out, the fact that attacks are sustained beyond a score if the kick out isn't going well, I think is a remarkable addition to the excitement and the pressure of football.
Yeah.
You know, it really is, like, you know, and, you know, we could talk later about it, but like Galway had their chance and they did not wake up enough for that kick. And I wonder, was it the white flag, red flag thing or what, you know, what was it? But Galway were not awake for that and they had one chance to stop that kick out and they couldn't do it. And fair play to Meade for executing it. But Kerry were able to just constantly pressurise and it changed the game. But to your point about whether Armagh were able to get up for another year, I kind of see it slightly differently. The way I look at Armagh was they were very good in a lot of parts this year. They got to an Ulster final, they lost an extra time. They lost three games over the course of the year to three incredible teams. that's been the Armagh for the last couple of years. And last year, I think people thought that maybe they outperformed, and maybe this year, now when you're champions, people look at you differently and think you're underperforming. We're in an amazingly open era of Gaelic football where there's lots of good teams, all of them are flawed, and it's made it so exciting. Armagh needed extra time to beat Kerry last year, you know, when, and Kerry, they had Kerry on the ropes this year until a team hit a purple patch likes of which we've never seen. And that was the end of it. I wouldn't be thinking Armagh are too far off at all, and or they even were this year.
Yeah, it's
you
mad.
Know what I mean? I think they were always going to be in these 50. Armagh are a team, and I think most of the teams are, and maybe Kerry put their head above it in the second half yesterday, and they're the first team to do it. But I feel like all the teams are in these 50-50 battles, and anyone can come out, and we won't know who's standing at the end of the year.
And even teams that are fairly evenly matched, you can have a hammering in those matchups just on
because
a
of
day.
What we've just talked yeah. about almost. Mm. Yeah.
Or if you have somebody who just has their eye in, or a collection of individuals who have their
32 points.
In. It's like a Limerick hurling score.
That's incredible. It's
32 points
really
is
incredible.
Unbelievable. Like,
it was remarkable. It's like there was definitely one moment yesterday where you just kind of know that it's, you're going to have a memory from that exact moment forever. I don't know why it was. It was probably just the imagery on it. So I was sitting in the Cusack, and around 52 minutes in, Clifford scores his point to put Kerry 8 up. It's a brilliant kick pass from Graham O'Sullivan into the corner. And it's just something about it. It was like the distance, the fact that he was in the far corner underneath the Davin and the Hogan. And he was kind of hard to see 100% what was happening. You could kind of understand 80%. You weren't sure, was he behind the arc? Was he inside the arc? You weren't sure how close McCambridge was to him. And because of that haziness, all you could see was like the left limb of Clifford 10 feet in the air and the ball just sailing towards the post. And like, I mean, it's cliche to say time slowed down in that moment, but there was kind of a little pause in my consciousness at that point where I was like, geez, this is something I'm going to remember forever. Just seeing this guy in the absolute peak of his career doing a fairly trademark thing at this point, but in such a momentous occasion as well. So
it's funny,
there were loads of those.
We've compared Tony Kelly and David Clifford on the show twice, I think, in the last few weeks. But it's that the moment in the All-Ireland final, not the goal, was the most remarkable moment of my life, so much so that I don't almost remember it, you know.
Yeah.
But the point that he gets where he rises it and flicks it over the head and all that was right down in front of me in the thing. And it was the same feeling. It was this feeling of like, soak this in. I'm never going to forget the feeling I have right now as he does this magic. You know, and I think we've talked about like enjoying David Clifford when the greatness of somebody and the clock associated with that greatness puts a pressure on it.
Yeah.
Even as a fan, that you might not be able to enjoy it because all you're thinking is, what can we get out of this? Can we get David Clifford his 10 All-Stars and a 7 All-Irelands? You know, and it's like, oh, another year is gone. But enjoy it in the moment that it's there, because you'll rarely see anything like him again. Like, you know,
I've never. I've had to start training my mind to deal with this exact thing. Like yesterday after the game, like if there was a seagull flying overhead, I just tried to concentrate on the seagull just so that this moment would slow down for a moment, because I knew it was one of those very, very special days. And like underlying this whole thing, they just won a quarter final. Like, it's not like they've won an All-Ireland or anything like that, which I know is something that struck you as well, Mick, that this was,
well, it was
like,
just
such an emotional thing.
The
for
stats amazing. You know, this is now the 26th GA season of the century, and it's the 23rd time that Kerry have made an All-Ireland semi-final. This is where they live. This is where they start the season, basically, in some ways. But again, it wasn't just a quarter-final. This was a beleaguered team. This was a team that was hammered in the group stages to a Meath team that we probably look at somewhat differently now, but still. And, you know, had not performed and, you know, were limp enough in last season's championship. And again, you're on the counting clock of some of these great players, and they put in that kind of performance, the likes of which I don't know if we've ever seen for that 20-minute period.
Yeah, and I think it's the fact that they beat the All-Ireland champions. You know, you beat the champions, you know, that's a massive, massive result.
The team beat them last year.
And the team that beat them last year. And Jack O'Connor mentioned that in the press conference as well. He said that really hurts, that particular result. So,
yeah, we will get to Jack in just a moment. There's a text in from John in Limerick to say, lads, Armagh lost their legs at 55 minutes. You could see them falling off tackles, calves tightening up. They couldn't keep up with the pace of the closing quarter. There might be something in that. I think Charlie O going off had a massive impact at that moment as well for Armagh.
We should just mention, because not to get into specifics, we'll do much more analysis with the lads, but the David Clifford thing is wonderful, and there was some younger names that kind of came through yesterday. But I thought Sean O'Shea is someone that I think we talked about a lot when he came through, and people sort of see him as a fixture. It's almost like the Declan O'Sullivan to the Gooch, you know, element of it. You kind of expect him to be what he was, but I think he went to another level again yesterday. And it's like, we shouldn't forget somebody because we have him as 1A in this great duo. Yeah. You know what I mean? And
yeah, it's true.
He is remarkable.
Oh, it's totally deserving of man of the match yesterday. Well,
they got 32 points and he scored nearly half of them.
Yeah. It's insane performance from him yesterday. Right, the news round is coming your way with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. So we are starting with Jack O'Connor, and he's been critical of some of his own county men, Steve, in the aftermath of yesterday's win.
Yes, as critical as I was about our printer here in the office, because it didn't work, and that's why I'm reading off a phone, just in case anybody's watching saying, what's that rude man doing looking at his phone? But anyway, Kerry manager Jack O'Connor, yes, following that All-Ireland quarter-final win against Armagh, O'Connor has been hugely critical of some former Kerry players working in the media. Kerry put on a brilliant second-half display, most notably from the 41st to 56th minutes, beating the Orchard County by 32 points to 121. Sean O'Shea bagging 12 points in the game as the men from the Kingdom obliterated Armagh's kick-out strategy. It sets up a semi-final match with Tyrone. That, of course, is fixed today for Saturday, July 12th at Croke Park, and will be preceded by the Tailteann Cup final between Kildare and Limerick at 2:30. On Sunday, July 13th, Donegal and Meath will throw in at GAA HQ at 4 o'clock after the All-Ireland Junior Final. Back to Kerry's semi-quarter-final win, coming just a couple of weeks after that group stage defeat to the Royals. And O'Connor was disappointed by the post-match comments after that game from some pundits.
But I think sometimes we're being judged on a different criteria to other teams. I mean, for example, Dublin got beaten by Meath in the Leinster Championship. I didn't see any ex-Dublin players coming out slating the team or slating the management like we had down south in our county. There's a sense of commitment to the team and a sense of loyalty to the team. And unfortunately, a few pundits don't always let themselves down in that regard. When everybody down, even in our own county, was throwing in the towel with us, I said in the dressing room after the cabinet, I said, lads, I've been here before, where we've been written off, completely written off. A Kerry team written off in Croke Park are dangerous, because it just takes a bit of the heat off. It allows them to play with a kind of a freedom and abandon, and that's what you saw there today. And maybe it was very tough for our man. And our mantra this morning was, we have to flip the script. The script has been written that Armagh have this game won. We have to flip that script. And every break and ball you win, every turnover you win, every score you get is a chip off the block there. And it's a way of flipping that script. So we did it block by block.
I'm not saying they can't want to win this All-Ireland, but it is an easier thing, I'd imagine, for a team to be the underdog when it comes to mentally preparing yourself. I was chatting to an all-star footballer after the game yesterday, and not from Kerry, and he had a brilliant line. He said, this morning, David Clifford woke up and he said, today, I get to be the asshole, because he's the underdog. He's the guy who's like getting stuck into his man. He can hang off him. He can be the man who's got a point to prove, whereas in the vast majority of his games, he's the guy with the target on his back. And that little mindset shift, he reckoned anyway, kind of took Kerry to a new level. So interesting to see what
Hampsey now in a couple of weeks.
That's it. Completely. the script is completely flipped. Where Kerry, I'd say, are probably favourites for the All Ireland now, let alone the Tyrone game. So can they deal with that sort of pressure? It's a different thing.
Now Tyrone have just beaten Dublin,
exactly,
and were I don't know. On Saturday night, I had them because I've been sort of talking about Tyrone. I wouldn't quite putting the word tipping there, but certainly talking them up all year as having the potential. And I thought they pretty much showed it on Saturday night. It's funny, the game is probably a little bit less dramatic. It happened a day earlier, but I feel like we've forgotten about it in some ways. I think they're going to come in. Like, this is an absolute marquee semi-final. It's unbelievable.
Dublin just... I felt at the start of the year, Dublin would get to a quarter-final and that would be as good as it got. I wouldn't be reading a huge amount into that particular result, but that's not to take away from Tyrone. They still have to beat Dublin at Croke Park. And the one thing I'd say as well, I think Malachy O'Rourke, I think he's an absolutely fantastic manager. And to do what he's done this year, I think has been pretty impressive. And if anybody's going to have a tactical plan to outsmart Jack O'Connor, I think Malachy could be the man.
I also love Malachy O'Rourke's demeanour on the sideline. Like when he's walking onto the pitch in Croke Park afterwards, he looks like kind of an extended member of the county board or something, as if he's not really had any part to play. He's just there shaking hands with the players. And he's like masterminded this thing, a brilliant motivational figure. And there's just the humility to how he carries himself on the pitch. He's very understated. And I just think he's a very, very impressive manager. Like, we'd been tipping Tyrone to be a dominant force in Gaelic football in, you know, two seasons time. Maybe it actually begins now and they actually claim this year, because that'd be ahead of schedule, I think it'd be fair to say.
There was a moment where Canavan had the ball under the Hogan stand, I think, and kind of miss hit that he didn't get the pickup right, and then just the calmness he showed, and he hit this beautiful crossfield ball. I don't know if you remember it. I think Tyrone only got a point out of it, but it was a goal chance. I was just like, God, he's so like his dad. Yeah. he really is, it's like the ultimate compliment. So you don't want to be, he's this like 25 year old all-star footballer, doesn't want to be constantly compared to his father, like, you know, Kasper Schmeichel style. He could win 12 Premier Leagues and always be Peter Schmeichel's son. But, you know, it's the ultimate compliment as well to say that he's so like Peter Canavan, you know.
We should talk about the other game yesterday. So we'll move on to your next story, Steve-O. So Pádraig Joyce, any clues about his future as Galway manager?
Well, he may have been emotional after Galway's defeat to the Royal Zone, but he wasn't making any rash decisions on his future as the county senior football manager. Joyce has taken his team to two All-Ireland finals and is in the final year of a three-year deal he agreed with the county board at the end of 2022. Last year's runners-up showed the kind of character that has taken them this far in this year's championship, but they couldn't find the killer blow to put me the way. A wonderful performance by forward Jordan Morris, who scored 1-6 from play, helped propel Robbie Brennan's charges to yet another unexpected win over Division 1 opposition. It's the first time Meath have reached the last four of the championship since 2009. It was a slow start to this quarter-final by both teams, and not for the first time by Galway, as something Joyce has been left puzzled by.
No, because we're watching the slow starts with the last maybe four or five games, and we've changed a lot of stuff. We've changed the warm-up, we've changed the bus driver, we've nearly changed everything to try and do what we can do, but that seems to be working. Yeah, there's a lot of outstanding teams there, like, you know, like there is good teams there, we know that, but our job was to beat Meath, like, at semi-final. We just weren't good enough to do it, so there's no point. We can't do that. We can't go on and try and win it out. But yeah, we had ambitions to win it, as every team that's left has, but like, there is some good teams left in the competition, you know. But it's football is leveling out a good bit. Yeah, it's great to see Meath back in where they are, because they've gone away a long time as well. You know, they're a powerhouse over the years, so fair play to them and the supporters. Like, they're really good there, got behind their team, and all we can do is wish them well as they go forward. We just got knocked out of the championship, so like, we're not going to make any rash decisions. We'll sit and chat. There's a lot of lads and they have decisions to make about next year as well, and as we have as a management as well. So look, we'll do that in due course. County board have always been very supportive of me, the players, so look, we'll sit down and chat to them and we'll get things properly organised. So whatever will be, so there won't be no statements or no rushes coming out the next year or two. I'll tell you that.
The only thing here is that the pattern for Galway has been an All-Ireland final every second year. So you'd think next year they'd be back in the final if he just sticks with it. And they have a really, really good squad of players. But yesterday, oh my God, that is a setback on the Galway project, to put it mildly. That is probably their worst loss under Joyce, I would argue.
I find it hard to understand Galway, because you just look at, remember we were talking about the shape of the Armagh team and the setup to do damage. I just feel like Galway are a really well put together team. Now maybe the window is closing a little bit on that, because forwards are possibly, you know, aging and injury prone, and, you know, Paul Conroy's not going to be able to do this forever and so on, but it just doesn't click 80% of the time. And when it does, it's amazing. Like it did in that 5 minute period where they got, what was it, 2-3?
Yeah.
And it looked like the game was out of reach. It's just like, this is the team that we've been waiting for, you know, all season. And they just couldn't get it going again after that.
No, like, I mean, Meath and their response after that. Like, it's absolutely extraordinary.
Isn't that the thing, though? Because what, in two of the three games, in three of the four games this year, this week, there was a massive comeback. And the Armagh and Monaghan were just left reeling. And had no answer to it. And it was a knockout punch that they just could not come back from. And they never even showed signs of life afterwards. And Meath just kept at it. And this is the most inexperienced team of them all. The team has been there the least. And they should have been the most rattled of all. They should have been, oh, we had this in our hands and we've lost it. And they did the opposite. They were unbelievable.
My Meath friends tell me that, or they're working on the theory that Meath have just been perpetually underrated all season long, because none of their games have been on terrestrial television until yesterday. So actually people have got no appreciation of how brilliant they've actually been. People have clocked, oh, they've beaten Dublin. They've clocked, oh, they've beaten Kerry. But not a whole pile of people actually watched those games for 70 minutes.
The game was on terrestrial television.
That's a very good point, actually. None of their wins were on terrestrial TV.
To be fair, though, Robbie Brennan is an excellent manager, excellent coach. Tactically, he was on the money yesterday. And like you look at the backroom team he's got as well, like with Martin Corey, Joe McMahon, like it's a great coaching setup they have there. Like they really could get to a final here. You kind of wonder, like if Donegal's, you know, a huge amount of games starts to catch up with them, I wonder if this 2 week break is coming at a bad time for Donegal as well. It's almost like, I know they're going to get a bit of rest, but it's almost, you know, the way a rugby team plays a long season and they get that couple of week break before the European and the muscles start to seize up within those couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I just wonder if Donegal will be nearly better off having a game the following week. And I don't think
you can play four championship weeks in a row. I just think it's a bridge too far.
I'm not saying you should either, but it's just that I wonder if this is coming at a bad time, this break nearly. Look, that might be ridiculous when we come to look at the match afterwards in the wake of it. But I do think everybody was talking about Galway's character and how they always have been in tight situations in matches this year. They're behind in games and then late in the second half they rally and they see the team off and they get their win or whatever. But it looked like they were going to do that yesterday and Meath had a reply for them, and that's so, so impressive. I just think
They could get
to a final this year.
And I think they have gears to go. Like the misses from the goalkeeper is the obvious work on, let's say. But I think, as we've been discussing, kickouts are so important. I think Meath could potentially be the best team in the country in terms of breaking ball. It's like they've got a dozen Brian Dewars.
They love a good big fist down into space, don't they? I love that tactic. Yes.
And two pointers. They've got two pointers as well there. So that's a huge thing.
Jordan Morris, one of the best forwards in the country.
No Wikipedia page this lad. Can we sort that out?
Jordan Morris doesn't have a Wikipedia page.
Can we sort that out? Jordan Morris is...
I'd say Tommy Rooney's probably looking after him.
I actually gave out to him about it earlier. I felt like it was on him. Jordan Morris, I have to say, do you know when you're looking at it, the aftermath of a game like that yesterday and you're thinking of, like, there's a few players, but two in particular, Brian Menton and Donald Keoghan, and you're sort of thinking, like, they've been... And especially Keoghan. Keoghan's been one of those players that was, like... quiet, you know, he was almost in the Declan Brown thing of like Meath were almost a weaker county for the entirety of his career, and he's like, you know, this like outstanding player on usually a poor team, and now and was a wunderkind, and then it's like late in his career now when they're finally almost giving back to him.
Yeah,
and he was still brilliant, I thought, yesterday as well. Like, you know, he still got it. But it's players like that that I love when runs like this happen, you know.
Steve, we'll do one more Gaelic game story before the break. So the Kilkenny hurlers have got a bit of a boost ahead of their All-Ireland semi-final on Sunday.
Yeah, this is a big one on. They will have a key man back for that semi-final clash with Tipperary at Croke Park. Cats manager Derek Lynn confirmed Owen Cody is available for selection, having missed a portion of the season due to injury. Two players that will miss out though for Kilkenny are Harry Shine and Marty Murphy. Meanwhile, Cork hurling boss Pat Ryan has confirmed that Seamus Harnedy will not feature in their semi-final against Dublin. The Rebels boss says the 35-year-old is suffering with a hamstring issue.
All right, Steve-O, we will be back with more from the extended news round after the break.
On this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
Would you have been in touch much with Damien Duff?
Damien, I would have just tic-tac with text messages every now and again, and listen, when I left Cork, Damien was the first one to message me the next morning. Obviously, I sent him a message last week as well when he'd left, and yeah, look, it's a big blow losing Damien from the league.
And we also had this.
These boys, honestly, this is the foundation year. And whatever happens in the All-Ireland semi-final, 2025 is going to be the foundation. Telling you now, a flame has been lit and the foundation has been set.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
Welcome back to Monday's Bumper News Round. Stephen Doyle, where are we going next? We've got Lions team news, I think.
Yes, indeed. Six Irish players have been included in the Lions team to face Queens and Reds on Wednesday on. Jack Conan will make his first start off the tour in the back row, while Andrew Porter, Ronan Keller and Bundy Aki are also included. Jameson Gibson-Park will start at scrum half, while Hugo Keenan is named at full back. Meanwhile, Scottish scrum half Ben White has been called into the squad to replace Thomas Williams, who's been ruled out of the rest of the tour with a hamstring injury.
Only one Welsh player on tour now. The last time that happened, 1902.
No way. Yeah. Jeez, that really says a lot, doesn't it? Like, we're going to be speaking to Chris Jones about this a little bit later on, but it's going to be really interesting, particularly to see what happens with the Irish forwards in this year's tour. Like, there's a bit of uncertainty outside of Dan Sheehan if there'll be Irish representation in the test front row. The Tadhg Byrne question, where he plays, is a big one. And then also Joe McCarthy has just inserted himself into the conversation here.
Yeah, the way Sam Warburton was talking on Sky afterwards, he would suggest that, like, and the way most people talked about it, and anyone watching the game as well, because McCarthy was so good, would suggest that, like, he is certainly seen as someone that's bolted into the test team, or at least in pole position, and Itoje is definitely going to play. So it would have been kind of impossible to think of a Lions team without Tadhg Byrne. Now, he was named at six, you know, in one of the games, so there is also that possibility, but at the same time, you look at the way the team is lined up on Wednesday, it's got Jack Morgan and
Tom Curry.
And Tom Curry as the six and seven. They're both open sides, and the whole squad is filled with open sides. Josh Landerfleer is going to have a chance at a starting point, these two, you know, and Ben Earl as well. Like, so there's a sense that I think he might be looking at the team as having two open sides, and maybe sacrifice a line-out jumper. So, you know, it's interesting. I can't. It would have been very hard to see a Lions starting team without Tadhg Byrne a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I still think there's a good chance he will start six. Yeah.
At six.
When it comes to the test. It's mad how Jack Conan is now, other than Dan Sheehan, the first Irish name on the team sheet that has just arrived at this point, and everybody seems to accept that he is the eight.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's fair as well, and considering what he did a couple of years ago, yeah, but I kind of agree with you. I thought it would be one of those things that would develop over a couple of weeks, and then people would realise that it didn't kind of sense that, right, we're going in, he hasn't even started the game yet,
yeah,
and he's nailed on number eight, you know. It'll be interesting to see Gibson Park. Actually, these games are fascinating because I feel like I don't remember a Lions tour when we've been less sure of what the test team would be.
Yeah.
And Hugo Keenan has a really big game this weekend because we don't know who's going to be fullback. It's hard to see how Blair Kinghorn is going to come in, you know, next week, is it? Like, I don't know when he's coming, but they played on Saturday, obviously.
I think he's there by the weekend.
He's there by the weekend, so he won't play this weekend then, obviously. So it's like, it's hard to see him starting at least the first test.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, Elliot Daly was pretty good.
Yeah.
At the weekend.
And that might well be the outcome there.
Yeah, yeah. So, but Keenan has a chance. Gibson Park, I think, is, he just needs to show some form and he'll play, you know. So there's lots of, Andrew Porter, I think, is someone that, like, still has a huge chance of playing.
There's a big momentum behind Ellis Genge at the moment, it seems. So,
the one thing I would think about that is, I don't know if people should get too worked up about that, because if you have Ellis Genge and Andrew Porter there, they're going to play 50 minutes and 30 minutes. And whoever comes off the bench is going to make a bloody big impact. Yeah. So I would consider it a test 23, especially for the forwards, especially for the front row forwards. If you're in the 23, then you're having significant game time. Like,
yeah, so no need to get lose any sense of nationalistic pride in us as a rugby nation.
Well, we're all Irish and British now, on.
Absolutely we are. Right, where do you want to go next, Steve-O?
Yes, well, moving on then. Actually, I just thought there was very interesting comments. We'll come to maybe shortly Carla Ward, the Republic of Ireland manager, after last night's friendly match. But let's bring you up to date with Wimbledon first, because a furious 90 Daniel Medvedev smashed up his rackets after suffering a shock first round defeat at Wimbledon to French journeyman Benjamin Bonzi. The Russian, who reached the semi-finals last year, tumbled out 7-6, 3-6, 7-6, 6-2 in just over 3 hours. Very uncharacteristic behaviour there from Daniel Medvedev. It has been a struggle at times for the defending champion Carlos Alcaraz on centre court, but he did beat the Italian Fabio Fognini in 5 sets. That went to a deciding set, 4 hours and 37 minutes. Alcaraz was in court for that one. American 12th seed Francis Tiafoe beat Elmer Muller from Denmark in straight sets, 6-3, 6-4, 6-2. Sadly, Stefanos Tsitsipas had to retire due to a back injury as the French qualifier Valentin Royer advanced to the second round. In the women's singles, another player had to retire injured. There was Ons Jabeur, the two-time finalist, was playing against the Bulgarian Victoria Tomova. She lost the first set but then had to go out in the second set. Women's world number one Aryna Sabalenka is through to the second round. The Belarusian beat Carson Brandstein of Canada in straight set 6-1, 7-5 to progress. The 22nd seed Donna Vekic from Croatia and Ukrainian 13th seed Elina Svitolina won their matches in straight sets.
When just really quickly on this, because I know we don't have much time, but when you say he smashed his rackets, like, it's plural. He systematically took out one at a time, smashed it, went back for another one. Or what, did you see?
I didn't see the because we didn't have that match on TV we were watching in studio. So just going on the match reports there. But
I kind of want it to be that. I don't want to check it in case it's something
He actually,
simple.
It was a very John Giles FA Cup style assessment of his opponent's performance. You remember Giles used to get really angry at lower league teams who weren't doing so well, would then put on a brilliant performance to knock out a Premier League team in the first round of the Cup. In French, he was playing a French player, and in French he actually said, why don't you play like this all the time? You could earn yourself millions. You could be a top, top player. Anyway, yeah, just moving on to those Carl Award comments, because just regarding player welfare, it seemed pretty crazy the kind of conditions that the Irish players were playing in against America last night. Of course, it was that friendly match they were playing in the USA. Carla Ward said in her post-match comments on RTE that some players were asking to come off during the game. That was just after 22 minutes during a cooling break, but Ward felt that she couldn't make the changes then. At halftime, she made three forced changes, revealing that a couple of the players were unwell at halftime. Ireland suffered a 4-0 defeat to the hosts in Cincinnati, with the match played in 31 degree heat and also with high humidity. Ward said after the game that in the second half, players were almost begging to come off and we couldn't do anything about it. She added, "It's been quite dangerously hot out there today, and with humidity at 94, I don't think I've ever felt anything like it."
Yeah, extraordinary. And speaking of which, the Club World Cup affected by the exact same problem, and there are some fixtures tonight.
Yes, indeed. Inter take on Fluminense, and that one kicks off at 8 o'clock in North Carolina. It's a last 16 match. The winner of that tie will face the winner of Manchester City versus Al Hilal, which kicks off in Orlando at 2 a.m.
So this is when we're all supposed to start caring about the Club World Cup.
Oh yeah,
knockout
yeah.
stages.
We're all
here
in
we go.
Now, yeah.
On the bandwagon?
No, I'm absolutely not on the bandwagon. I, if anything, I'm turning more against it as it goes on. I just think... I've absolutely no interest in it. I don't, it isn't gripping me. It feels like a postseason friendly tournament played in outrageous conditions, and it's all about the money and nothing else, you know. So I don't, it's not why we watch sport, I don't think, you know. So that's just my personal opinion. I did see there was the most interesting that's happened in the Club World Cup so far was Jurgen Klopp came out. Obviously Red Bull Salzburg were involved for some reason. Again, like, why are Red Bull Salzburg qualifying for this so-called prestigious tournament but Liverpool aren't? Again, I just, we'll leave it at that. So they obviously went out in the group stages, and Klopp came out and, you know, true to what his character over the last 10 years was, criticising the tournament based on player welfare reasons. But the most amazing thing was a Sky Sports News clip that I think people will have seen going around of, you know, if you don't like it, don't watch it. Completely missing the point, but very kind of on the nose. I'm representing the idea that FIFA have put on a really good show here for me out here in America, and we want to make sure that it is, you know, that the Jurgen Klopp types, the dissenting voices who are asked their opinion, you know, shouldn't be taken too seriously, you know. So I don't know how anybody else feels, but by far the most interesting thing that's happened in the Club World Cup so far.
It was actually quite an interesting clip to watch Cave on Sky Sports.
Cave, yeah.
And his most compelling piece about why this matters is that the clubs get rich.
Oh, yeah, that's the only thing that matters.
It's
like
pretty naked that this is the motivating factor. And also, he made some remark about seeing Pep Guardiola in good form. He was like, you guys have like a moody Pep Guardiola in the Premier League. You come over here to the Club World Cup and he's in great form. Then I read quotes from Pep Guardiola this morning where he's like, the Club World Cup is going to destroy us.
Yeah,
could destroy us next year.
He said it in a kind of a jovial, friendly way, though.
Yeah.
I actually heard the quotes, but he was backing up Klopp. And, you know, I just thought that it was such weird, bad faith reporting. And maybe that's unfair, and maybe he's got his own perspective. But the idea that Jurgen Klopp is saying, this isn't for me, and that's why he's having a moan, was how that was treated. And it's a super viral clip. People will have seen it. But it's Sky Sports News that are pushing it. So they obviously think there's a point here, you know, and it's a sense that, like, well, Jurgen Klopp, like, you know, to each their own. Some people think sport is about how much money teams can make. But it's like, the issue isn't whether it exists or not for the sake of whether, for me, I'm interested or not interested. It's the fact that these players are playing long into June, will be playing into July, will come back, have a long season again in the Premier League, in the Champions League. It's all these teams are Champions League teams. If you want to look at the European teams, are certainly the ones that will go deep into the tournament. And then they will go and play in the World Cup in these similar conditions next year for almost all of them again. Their countries will likely qualify. And there is just no break. There is no let up. Every tournament is more important than the last, and every player will be flogged until they break down. And I know they're all multi-millionaires, but the idea that this is what we want from our footballers is to see tired footballers not at their best constantly.
Yeah, well, like I think that like there's two sides to it. Like there's, you know, there's a very Eurocentric view out there that, you know, this is a really stupid competition. We're playing all against all these like very weak teams around the world, and our players should be on their holidays and getting ready for next season. But then, you know, the likes of Fluminense, the likes of Boca Juniors, River Plate, Urawa, Red Diamonds, all these clubs around the world, like the Red Diamonds got an amazing send off in Japan from their club supporters, and they're absolutely buzzing for the competition. They want to see their club sides taking on the best teams from Europe, the best teams in the world. And it's huge for them. Like, it's a really, really big competition. But then there is that side of, well, players are getting flogged. They're playing these summer tournaments annually now, whether it be the International World Cup, whether it be the European Championship, whether it be the, you know, South American Championship, whether it be the whatever. You've got these, and you can't keep having these summer tournaments and absolutely flogging players. And it's going to have an impact, as Pep Guardiola said, on their season next season. And then there is the money side of it, because, great, you know, these smaller clubs will make big money, but then the smaller clubs will go back to their leagues and it'll completely skewer the transfer markets, you know. And it's going to be the same with teams like Chelsea and Manchester City, who are making big, big money here. And again, it's going to inflate prices in the transfer market. And it's just, it's a big mess, I think. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
We had Tim Vickery on, given that side of it, of what it means to, in particular, the Brazilian clubs. He was saying, and that's fine, but I don't see, if there's not a competitive balance to that, I don't really see what the point of it is to have a competition for the sake of a competition either. You know, like, I mean, we have it in international football, the money, like, look, I don't know, maybe that's fair. But from a European point of view, there is, I think there's nothing good about this, I have to say.
Yeah, no, I'm struggling to kind of get interested in it at all. Like, you look at a fixture like Real Madrid versus Juventus tomorrow at 8 o'clock, or in the quarterfinals of the weekend, you've got Paris Saint-Germain versus Bayern Munich at 5 o'clock our time. Like, that, if this is going to be anything, that has got to get huge attention, and everybody's got to be talking about that game. And I suspect that it's going to be a mere footnote on this sporting weekend for even for football only fans.
And just a quick point on that, like, Xabi Alonso takes over as Real Madrid manager, and he's just thrust straight into a, not that I'm feeling sorry for him, but thrust straight into a competitive tournament, which I'm sure he's probably going, oh my God, like, I he could have done with a few, you know, handy pre-season friendly matches to have a look at his squad, to have a look at his team. But straight off the bat, he's into a competitive tournament and he's under pressure to win it. Yeah. Because Real Madrid want to win this tournament, you can be damn sure.
Your man, another thing that, like, Cave said, that I just think it really needs interrogating, was he said that, like, these teams are playing this at this part of the year, then they'll have a holiday and then they'll come back, whereas every other team will go on a similar tour. There's a big difference between going and having your pre-season in a place where you're going and playing matches in Chicago or whatever, and lads are playing but no squad numbers on their back and 45 minutes a game, and it's half the kids and the lads who are going to go out on loan and a few other players and all this, and trotting around the pitch trying to get fit for, which you have to do anyway, but you just happen to be doing it in America or in Asia. And I don't love that either, but there's a big difference between that and trying to win a Club World Cup in the middle of July before having to start the Premier League season on the 14th of August or something.
Yeah, for sure. Let us know if you're watching this thing. Our number is 0879 180 180. There's a text I want to put to you in just a sec, but do you want to bring us your next story first, Stevo?
Yeah, just to bring you a bit of news about Shamrock Rovers and two high-profile departures from their senior women's squad. A goalkeeper, Katie Keane, and midfielder Ruisha Littlejohn have both left the club. Keane is set to join a club in the Women's Super League. She's a very highly rated goalkeeper and has a big future. Littlejohn poised for a return to full-time football as well. Sligo Rovers, meanwhile, have confirmed the loan signing of Bohemians midfielder James McManus until the end of the season. The 20-year-old, who has featured for Ireland at underage level, is the third new arrival for Rovers in recent weeks.
And there's a text in here asking you, did Mick read the article in the paper over the weekend about Dulcis?
Yeah. And,
this is Conor McKeown's piece.
Conor McKeown wrote a great piece, I will say. Very well put. Connor's always been a great man for Dublin GAA. You know, it's like someone that we'd get on if we had a Dublin hurling story we wanted to do when they were in the doldrums and there was no sort of national profile to them and stuff like that. So his bona fides are well established. I felt quite seen, I have to say. It was an article about people born and raised in Dublin who suddenly become, you know, talk about going down home for the match and all of this stuff, like, you know, and talking in a slightly different accent, saying things that get you battered in school, I think was what he said. And all of that, very, very funny. So, good article. And I think he's right in his overall point that Dublin hurling needs a culture in of itself. Okay. But I do think he is talking about someone slightly different than me, which is the fan, the Niall Quinn he mentions in the piece, who is a Dublin football fan and will stand on Hill 16, but then is a Tip fan for right, the hurling. Okay. I am not that. I always said this is like, I play GA here and everything like that, but I was always a Clare fan. That was where I spent entire summers there. That was where I went to matches. And when Dublin played Clare in 1992, and I was 7 years old, in the 1992 All-Ireland football semi-final, I was supporting Clare. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know if I need to defend myself on it, but I actually do feel like I need to, yeah.
Well, I mean, that text would target you.
The only thing I'll say about things like that, or various things, he quotes Anthony Daly. I had a chat with Daly about this after he was Dublin manager, but talking about one of the things that really annoyed him as Dublin manager was these Dublin people that would go support in other counties. Mm. And I talked about my situation and was very much like, that was it. And he was like, well, it's fair enough. And look, the fact that it's Clare didn't hurt either, you know. But I was like, yeah, but everybody has their story. You know, everybody has their story. And we live in a nation where our international teams are flooded with people of diaspora and all, like, and it matters to them, and there's a connection to their family's place and to their parents' place. Why should that be any different with counties? I don't really understand why there's such a attitude of you support where you're from, stop, and nobody's allowed to have nuance, or there's rules attached to sport and you will stick to them at all costs, you know?
I tell you who's more annoying than people like you, Mick, and
thanks very much. Glad there's someone worse.
That would be the people who live in Dublin but then follow two separate counties, mother and father. So you might have a Dubliner whose mam is from Meath, so they follow the Meath football team, but their dad is from Kilkenny, so they follow Kilkenny hurlers.
Should do it, like, the other way around if
absolute,
they had any.
Absolute glory hunters. Absolute glory hunters. You know, have a bit of self-respect. You know, it's like...
I must say I'm unfamiliar with the concept of the sort of split loyalties. I can totally understand somebody living in a place and supporting the team of their parent. Like what you just outlined there, mother, father, that's a little bit understandable as well. But somebody who makes a decision to support a different county that they're not emotionally attached to. Like, so the Dublin... in the hill for the Dublin footballers, and then supporting a real, in inverted commas, a real hurling county then.
But in a real way as well, like as in like going to all the games and becoming and passionate and attached to your home. I do kind of think, but again, I don't want to, like, my personal opinion is you should have a county, but that's like, that shouldn't be a rule. I shouldn't think less of you if you don't agree with that. You know what I mean? I do think we need to have a little bit less rules about what you're supposed to feel like. Conform, or else you're not a real sports fan, you know?
We have time. Do you want to play the Keith Andrews audio just to finish up, I think?
Just briefly, Keith Andrews unveiled officially today as the new Brentford head coach, and he was asked at the press conference what type of manager he's going to be.
I'll be me. I'll be authentic. I'll be who I am on a daily basis. That won't change in terms of how I deal with people on a daily basis, regardless of the role that I'm in. Obviously, the responsibilities are very different to the role I've just had. Very pressurised, need brilliant people around me, which I have got, and we will add to that. I won't try and emulate anybody. I've got a lot of respect for those names that you mentioned, and I've taken a lot from a lot of people on the journey that I've been on, but I'll be me.
Yeah, Keith Andrews there, speaking for the first time as Brentford manager. Steve-O, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mick, thank you.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Football on Off the Ball.
That was the main thing that when I finished playing football. In other words, you're bringing the knowledge that you have over years of football to people who watch football.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.